Thanks.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Evening, everyone. My name is Jay, and I'm an alcoholic. And God is doing for me today what I couldn't do for myself, because it's a little past 7 o'clock on a Friday night, and I'm in Yuma. No cocktails. Which, for an alcoholic of my variety, is really a stunning occurrence. And I want to thank Rick for inviting me out, and it's always a pleasure to be with my dear friends, Matthew and Michael, and it's just wonderful to be sober today. I mean, it's still incomprehensible. I meet people along the line that say, you know, I fell off the pink cloud at about 60 days. I've been on a pink cloud since the second day of May in 1979. Because I still am thrilled that I'm not drinking. And I know that it is not of my power that I'm not drinking. And so, you know, how did a nice guy like me end up at a place like this with people like you? I mean, can you imagine? We're here and Babs is able to say toke, and it's age appropriate. <You know>? Oh, well, my people. So I was born in El Segundo, California, which, if you need a reason to drink, is as good as any. Toxicity is just a way of life. It's the little town is between the Los Angeles International Airport. Then there's the defense contracting community. Then there's the oil refinery, which the town got its name, El Segundo, the second oil refinery in the state of California. And then on the little patch of beach between the community and the Pacific Ocean is the waste treatment plant for the entire county of Los Angeles. So you just want to get right with your environment. Now, I had no desire to be alcoholic. It had no allure, interest to me at all. I came from a family, though, that it appears to gallop in. My father was extraordinarily good-looking, and women loved him, and he moved fast, and he drank hard. And my mother was extraordinarily beautiful, and she didn't drink very much at all. So the violence in my family came from the unrecovered Al-Anon. And I'd just like to say that I am so thrilled to be at an event where so much of Al-Anon is featured, because my, I'm deeply grateful to the family groups, and I've been a member for, I don't know, probably 29 years, and I'm really sorry that it took me so long to come to the family groups. And for those of you who don't know about the glory of what's available in the family groups, it's not alcoholic management school. Just so you know. I mean, a lot of people, they think that's what it is. It's, you know, some kind of alcoholic behavioral thing, you know. Come on, Fido. But what I've found there by having a sponsor and going through the steps is I have found a relationship with myself and a generosity of spirit for who I am that I never had before I came to Al-Anon. So anyway, little bit about that. So I'm in this town, and I've this family. I've got two siblings. I've got a sister that's 2 years younger than me, who is a renunciate, and she and her husband live in the wilds of Colorado, and they are unplugged, off-grid. And then I have a sister who lives in Las Vegas who is 35 years sober and active, and her husband's an active member, and they're just a joy to be around. And the other thing about the DNA is that every one of my my cousins has been involved in some kind of has been incarcerated for one weirdness or another, or they're 400 pounds and living in a trailer. So it's I got out. I'm walking free today. My sister's walking free today. It's a wonderful, wonderful gift, because this thing, this alcoholism, 85 years ago, it's a death sentence. There is no way out, except occasionally here or there somebody gets hit like lightning, as Carl Jung said to Roland Hazard. And yet look at this room. It's packed with clear eyes, open hearts, semi-open minds. It's amazing. So, I hit the lottery. I'm born male, Caucasian, and Californian in the 50s. You can't get any longer, greater odds than that. And what's the best thing I can do? End up in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, I'm living in this lovely little community, but I was the short guy. You remember the short guy? I can't throw the ball as far, I can't run as fast. But when I'm 11 years old, I learn that I can do something better than guys that are bigger and tougher and strong with me. Metabolize beverage alcohol. Obviously, this is a gift from God. And when one is gifted, one pursues it with enthusiasm. And so I learned the joys, because, I'm young and short, of making models in small, enclosed, unventilated rooms. Any other glue sniffers here? Yeah. And we can increase the list ad infinitum. But when I had that front drink, something happened to me. Something happened for me that doesn't appear to happen in most people that walk the planet. There's only maybe 10, 12% the people that have this malady that we call alcoholism. And what happened for me is that when I drank it, I had what the spiritual people call a unitive experience. Everything fit. The world was all right to be in. The Creator was obviously right in the way things were set up. I could use my whole lung capacity. And I was not concerned about what I thought you thought about me. I was just fine, thank you. And when one has that experience, you go for it. I mean, I couldn't imagine not being in that type of state. And by the time that I'm in seventh grade, I'm making sure that my consciousness is altered whenever possible. I've got this thing. By the time I'm 16 years old, how do you figure out whether you're alcoholic or not? Well, I like to suggest that what you do is take a look at what you do for recreation and then see what happens when 85% of the population exhibit the same behaviors. For example, by the time I'm 16 years old, my idea of a good time is to take a rack of Reds, 3 high-powered sedatives, Secanol, and wash it down with a quart of Spignata wine. Now, in 90%, 85% of the population, they exhibit that behavior. What happens? It's called synergistic effect. The barbiturate mixes with the alcohol. People's brains literally start to shut down. They forget how to breathe. They end up with what's called Hollywood death. With me, I'm looking for car keys and to make short-term romantic commitments. And if anybody out there is concerned about me talking about barbiturates, Seconal is the goofball that Bill Wilson gave Dr. Bob on his way to having the surgery. Just saying. Just saying. So, and another thing about, well, am I alcoholic or not? You know, we hear a lot of things nowadays in the room about trauma and the like, but if you've ever woken up with a life form with which you were unfamiliar when you left the house this morning, this could be construed as a traumatic experience. And, you know, but I just normalize it. You know, you wake up, oh, my socks are on. That's never a good sign. There's something next to me. Oh, my God, there's chaps on the chair. Oh, no. But it was the 70s. It wasn't a lifestyle. But anyway, so I start normalizing things that aren't normal. I'm doing things, I'm violating the trust of anybody that ever puts any in me, and I don't understand why that is. I think that what I am is I'm a bad guy getting what I deserve. Because what happens? I mean, have you ever come home and they've changed the locks? Right? And not only that, they've got the alcoholic luggage waiting for you, two hefty bags with all your belongings. So what do? You knock on the door, right? You know, obviously there's been a mistake here. Knock on the door. And, you know, sooner or later they finally come and they open the door and they're crying. And they go, where were you? You knew my mother was coming to visit and have dinner with us on Tuesday evening. This is Thursday morning. Where were you? Well, I was busy. Doing what? Doing what? And what I did not have the response to that question until I met Alcoholics Anonymous. I got off work. I went and I had a few pops with the boys. And some of them went home. But I kept drinking. And I drank until the bar closed. And then I went to an after-hours place. And we got some of that Peruvian marching powder so we could keep going. And we drank all through the day and all through the night. And I'm here because it's the only place that's open. I don't realize that what I'm trying to do is to slake a thirst that cannot be slaked. I take the front one and I am off and running. I cannot predict how it is that I'm gonna end up. Now, I'm from the Descartesian school of alcoholism. I drink, therefore I am. I mean, I had no desire to be a lame. I would do anything in my power not to operate like those lames. And so what does that get you? Living in a Pinto. Now, this is a part in the talk where usually I say the Pinto was a, explained to the younger people, but I seem to be in an age-appropriate environment where everybody, the group conscience is, we know Pintos. The women who dated men who drove them are all kind of ducking under the table at the moment. But then there's the ones in the that were with the gremlin people over here, but we won't go there. Anyway, so I reached the point that I can no longer hold a job. I can no longer hold the gaze of anybody who loves me. I know that it's going to get worse, and I got to get out. And so I'm driving around stealing gasoline and alcohol. I hadn't been able to finish college. I'd had a couple of really nice work opportunities. All that stuff gone. Why? Because I take the first drink, and I burn my life to the ground. And I got to start over again. And I got to start over again. And I got to start over again. And I reached the point in my life where I didn't have the inner resource. I had drunk away my soul, and I could not start one more time. And I'm sitting at the Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara, California, with my father. I'd been able to get OR'd, and over a vodka rocks, he says to me, do you think you have the disease? Huh? What are you talking about? But that's not what I said. The still small voice inside of me said, pay really close attention. He might pay for the lawyer. So, okay. And he says, I've checked with my mom. You can stay with her. I got somebody I want you to talk to. Here's some money for gas. Call this guy when you get to my mom's house. And so I drove from Santa Clara down to El Segundo, and I call this guy. He says, meet me at the Howard Johnson's tomorrow morning at 7:30. Don't have anything to drink. And don't smoke any of that crap either. And how did he know? So I go and I meet this guy, and I don't have anything to drink before I meet him. And I go into the coffee shop, and he starts talking about himself. And he had problems in his life, and then he'd been Alcoholics Anonymous. No problems. Talking about himself. 45 minutes he's talking, and I can't stand it. I haven't anything to drink yet. And he's not closing me. So I prompt him. I say, hey, do I need psychiatric treatment? How about religion? Or do you think treatment might be appropriate for somebody like me? And this guy gets up. And he says, listen, Trick. He said, if you or your family can get the $3,000 it's going to take to stick you into one of these spin dries, he said, go out and drink the money up. And when you're done, call Alcoholics Anonymous. They do it for fun and for free. And if you want AA, you're going to have to get it the same way you got your drugs and alcohol, kid. It's in the white pages of the phone book. Bye. And he left. He didn't buy my breakfast. He didn't take me to the Ilano Club and say, oh, this is the new man. No, he said, listen, punk, if you want to save your life, here's where you go. And when you show us you're interested in saving your life, we're interested. That was it. I went home to my grandmother's house, and I poured myself a big water glass full of Daviess County old-fashioned Kentucky bourbon with 3 ice cubes and knocked that puppy back, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up at a noon meeting. I walked into the noon meeting and everybody started sharing at me. How did they know to share at me? But when my hair's really long, I look like the Sphinx. And my fingernails are long, and I got the zeps-ups going because I've only got about 6 ounces of booze in me. And the third guy that talked was a guy by the name of Butcher Joe. You can always tell Butcher Joe. Joe Hacker. You can't make this stuff up. And Joe talked about when the family left, how he cried the big crocodile tears. And inside he's going, yeah, now we can drink and nobody's going to get in our way. I understood that. And he talked about knowing just how deeply he cut himself at work, that they'd have to take him to the hospital and he could get the drink he needed on the way. I understood that. I know how to walk into a bar and set up a bet with a bartender that I will eat a beer glass. And we'll split the money that we get from the patrons. And I haven't had to mutilate myself in 43 and a half years. And he looked right through me and he said, you don't ever have to feel the way that you feel about yourself ever again if you're willing to do the things that I've done. The whole reason I came from Sedona, the whole reason I said yes to Rick, was to say to you that you don't ever have to feel the way that you feel about yourself ever again if you're willing to do the things that I've done. Now, we're in a room with a lot of sobriety in here. And there's also a lot of pain. And there are a lot of issues that have not been addressed. And it may be that you're shopping online with money that you don't got. It may be that you're watching pornography until you're dehydrated. It may be that you're gambling. It may be that the food may be kicking your ass. My wife Adele said, "You go to the A that's kicking your A." But my experience of going to 4 other anonymous programs is that there is a language specific and a healing modality that is available in a nature that is not just here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm here to tell you that whatever A is kicking your A, that you don't ever have to feel the way that you feel about yourself again if you're willing to do the things that the women and men and the undefinables now, I guess we'd say, are willing to do in order to find recovery in that particular anonymous group. I bought the package because of what that man said, right there. I looked on the wall, I saw the steps, I went, oh, no, not this. And then I saw the traditions and I went, oh my God, I can stay here. I might be able to stay here. And then the most miraculous thing happened. There were 5 guys that were going down to the beach to play cards and watch girls go by on roller skates after the meeting. I was introduced to spirituality and Alcoholics Anonymous right from the gate. Incredible meditative practice. And from now on I'll say meditation from the gate. But these guys brought the new man along as entertainment. And they explained Alcoholics Anonymous to me. They said, this is AA, kid. We don't use no dope here. I said, huh? This obviously is some kind of branding issue that you haven't really addressed yet. And they said, we stay away from whatever leads us to the front drink. The reason we don't smoke marijuana is because sooner or later, Pepsi's not going to cut the cotton mouth. And when you're doing that Peruvian marching powder, you need a little Bombay, double Bombay on the rocks with a twist just to take the edge off. And of course, if you're being spiritual when doing psychedelics, have you considered the ceiling of this civic center? It's a veritable wonderland. You need a gallon of Red Mountain to settle through the experience. These people told me that was drinking. Who knew? I mean, where I come from, beer is a food. Beverage, they called it drinking. They said, we don't drink, we don't use, we don't go with girls who do. What an order, I can't go through with it. But I got the first two down. I have not picked up since I got that tutorial at the beach where they told me that if I went to the pharmacy and they sold the cough medicine with a shot glass on the top of it, might want to look at the label. And so I came in on a Wednesday, with the meeting Wednesday night. They only had two meetings a day. There was a meeting at noon and a meeting at 8:30. No matter what, there was no deviation. Nothing changed. Period. This is AA. If there's anything at a different time, it's suspect. I don't know. So anyway, I almost drank on Friday night. I went to there was a dance after the meeting, and I went to the dance. I got my good T-shirt on, a pair of Levi's, and I got bowling shoes, because that's what I ended up with. Bernice, here's a real comer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go vibrating through the door, and the women there are like the women here this evening. They've taken showers today. You know, they're swinging their hips and they're snapping their fingers, and I'm 24 years old, and I realize that I'm never going to get laid again in my life. So I head for the Pinot, and I get into it now, and I start driving towards the Stickenstein in El Segundo. Now I'm driving towards the Stickenstein, not to drink. I'm just looking for a woman who understands. And on the way, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous happened for me. The still small voice said, this is not a good idea. Turn the car around. And I did. That was the first time that I had ever followed what that voice said to me. I turned the car around, and I went back to the Alano Club, and I grabbed the guy that was working the hinge, and I said, talk program to me, please. If you want to know how to get 43 and a half years sober, there's been probably a half dozen occasions in my life where I've had to grab some member of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, talk program to me, please. And there have been four occasions where what I've had to do is I've had to get down on my knees and say, help me, please. And this is what we have, ultimately. When the internet's gone down, when there's no electricity, when you can't make it to the meeting, in that still, dark place where you're up against it. We absolutely insist that you turn to a power that is undefinable and ask for help. And if you do that, the help materializes. At least that's been my experience, and that's what I'm here to share with you is my experience. So this guy gets me a copy of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd been too cool to get it. You know, I didn't want to look like I'd been to the Bible study, right? And he explains a little to me about the book and sends me home to read it. And so I start reading the book. And I was really lucky. I got hooked where Silkworth talks about the sense of ease and comfort that comes from having a few drinks. That unitive experience that I told you about. That other people can have with impunity. I was impressed that there was a language. It wasn't my language, but there was a language describing what happened to me. And so I kept reading. I wasn't interested in that stock market crash or that world war. You know, I wanted something contemporary. I wanted something disco, you know. But I kept reading, and I got to the end of We Agnostics, which, if you're withdrawing from alcohol, is really eloquently written. And, you know, whirling steel girders, and, you know, anyway. So I get to the end of that, and there's Fitz Mayo's stories at the end, our Southern friend, and third guy in New York, and he's talking about how these guys came and they talked to him about, you know, AA, and you know, or that they weren't drinking, and they were like him, and then they're getting ready to go, and they drop this God stuff, and he just goes, "Oh, not that." I mean, his whole family was, all the males in his family were Episcopal ministers, and you know how those people are. He's lost all the money in the stock market, and he's got post-traumatic stress from the war, and blah, 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 blah. And the voice says to him first, "Can everybody you know that says that there's a God say, could they be wrong?" And then the next thought is, "Who are you to say that there is no God?" I understood the story. Now he gets down on his knees and has a white light experience was a wonderful force for good in Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years. I get down on my knees and I say my prayer. My prayer is this: "I don't know from Jesus or Buddha. I don't know the Talmud, the Torah, the Upanishads. Just please get me the top. I'll do whatever these dried up old geeks say to do. Just please help me not to drink." And I would submit to you that I did all the first three steps of the program right there. It was a perfect prayer. "I'm with you." I didn't have any white light experience. I just kept sweating and smoking and walking around and all that stuff. And I end up at the noon meeting on Saturday. I'm on a naga hide couch. You know how all Lano clubs have those naga hide couches so that when you sweat, you're stuck to them? Smoking. This woman comes by, she's got bun in her hair and a black dress on and, you know, seam toes and correct shoes, and looks like she's been to Mass 8,722 times this month. And she says, "Oh, young man, you're new, aren't you?" "Hard to tell." She says, "I can tell you the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous in 4 words. "What are they?" "Find God or die." Oh, not that. Oh, please, not that. 43 years and a half years later, I can tell you the secret of God in 4 words. Find, love, and live. And when I say love, please don't confuse it with the affection I may have for my wife or my cat or my community. When I say love, I'm talking about a power that I've found in Alcoholics Anonymous, which I cannot define, but that I know with every cell in my being. And it is beyond words, it is beyond concepts, and it doesn't care what I call it. Well, this woman scared me so much, I got a sponsor at the noon meeting. And, just help. And so in 1979, you could read the big book unsupervised. It was a wonderful thing. They hadn't come out with the concordance yet. And I was reading it unsupervised, and I got to that part where it says, you know, if we this vital step's skipped, we may not get over drinking. I run to my sponsor. I go, I'm going to drink. He goes, huh? I said, well, look at this. And he goes, oh, that. So he gave me my four-step guide, two pieces of paper with a pencil down the mark, down the middle of it. He says, okay, kid, this is what I want you to do. I want you to get home and get really jacked up on coffee. This is before Starbucks, so it took a while. You know, and he says, I want you to look at the kitchen door, and I want you to go back through your life, and I want you to think about where you lived, where you went to school, where you worked, family gatherings. And if people, just like a parade of people was walking through the door, if your stomach had tightened when someone walked through, write down why. You get three sentences. No one's life is that interesting, kid. And he says, and then I want you to write out another list. I want you, what you stole, who you're afraid of, her mother, her sister. I want you to write down the sexual weirdness. We all got it. He said, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, kid. We're only impressed if an invertebrate is involved. He said, and I'll be over to your house day after tomorrow, and you'll read it to me. I went home. I followed his instruction.
Was it a fearless and thorough moral inventory using all four columns?
No. It was the greatest hits. That's what needs to be on the first inventory. It's the stuff that goes around and around and around and around in your mind when you hit the pillow at night. Believe me, if there's something deep, dark, and sublimated within you, it'll get in contact with you. You don't have to go dredging for it for years. There are people, I mean, have you been in sober situations where people actually, you know, say, oh, watch out for the poor step, it's tough. Poppycock. All we're asking any sober woman and man to do is to go home tonight and write down who you hate. You do this every night anyway. We're just asking you to use a pencil and paper. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. We're about this deep, but we've made this into this kabuki exercise where we're, you know, we're and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. There is nothing more powerful than sitting at the kitchen table turning pages and seeing the light go on in somebody else's eyes and to realize that that is what happened to me when my soul was reinvigorated. So he came over. I read him the stuff. We burned it. Said a couple of silly prayers, and then he sends me out to start making amends. So I'm 24 days sober, and I'm a fully vested member of Alcoholics Anonymous. First guy asked me to sponsor him when I had 28 days. And I called my sponsor. Now, you guys remember this. You know, if you were going to have a conversation with somebody on the phone, you both had to be standing next to a wall, right? And I got a hold of my sponsor. I say, the guy asked me to sponsor him. What do I say? He says, Jay, you say yes. I said, really? He says, Jay, if they're sick enough to ask you for help, you can't hurt them. It's the message. It's not the messenger. And I, you know, and that guy, we were close for maybe 3 months, and then he got a real sponsor, Sippy Sippy. Then on Facebook, like 5 years ago, I got a message from somebody, and it said, "Is this my sponsor?" And it was this guy. He's still consecutively sober, and he'd gone off, and had a wonderful life, and he was just reaching back to say hi. So the only thing that I think is remarkable about my recovery is that I've never been on hiatus. I've always had a home group, I've always had a sponsor, and I've always sponsored people. I've always been in the book. And it's been the great thing in my life. I have had the privilege of, you know, I mean, how do you in the next, you know, 20 minutes, how do I communicate to you what a life is like lived from their heart instead of from their head? I'll give you a few instances. They have something to do with me as a personality, but don't ever think that I am not cognizant that it is only love expressing itself through me. It is not anything of me, except maybe some willingness. And even then, I'm not sure. Should tell you a men's story, fun men's story. I'd go up to my grandmother Alice, and I'd stole just a little money from her. She taught me how to 10 bar. And brought her $500, and I said, "Grandmother, here's some money. I owe you a bunch more, but here's a start. And I'm not drinking, and God's helping me to stay sober." And she said, "Huh?" I said, "Well, God's helping me to stay sober." And she said, "Yeah, and Alcoholics Anonymous, okay." And she just gets up and she takes the money quickly and puts it in her purse. And then she grabs her hat and she starts moving towards the door. And I'm going, "Where are you going?" She turned around, she looked at me, and she said, "Jay, I don't know, 5, 7 years ago, you told me that you didn't believe in God anymore. And I went down and I put your name on a list at the church, and me and the gals have been praying for you, and I'm going down to make a donation and to report that my grandson has been restored." Spiritual terrorism. Highly effective. Now, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and started working with people, almost everybody had some church experience. Now it's very, very rare. So how do you do that? How do you carry on this tradition of spiritual terrorism? In 1985, my then wife Jacqueline got sober, and it was a miracle. And we picked three people: her best childhood friend, our friend Jeannie, who was a Playboy bunny, cocktail waitress, bon vivant, and our neighbor, and my sister Regina, who was missing in action with her self-employed Colombian entrepreneurial boyfriend. And every meeting that we went to, we tapped a chair and said their name. We did that for a year. And with that year, all three of them got sober. All three of them picked up one-year cakes, and the two that got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous are still consecutively sober. The other person decided that they wanted to drink again they had had the compulsion to drink removed. But these two people are still sober. So here's fun homework for you. Because everybody in this room knows somebody that's got a real problem, right? When you come to a meeting, tap the chair, say their name, and report back to me, please. My phone number is 310-874-2341. And I get calls. People say, I can't believe it. Just try it. You know, the spiritual life is an experiment. I'm not here for faith. I'm here for experience. I've made the experiment and I've had the experience that comes from it. And so I'm the most fortunate male form you've ever met. I live in Sedona, Arizona. I have a job where I am engaged in providing a space for spiritual teachers, psychological thought leaders, all kinds of brilliant people to come and bring their students and spend a week teaching. And these people, we do a little business, and then over time we become friends. And I had the privilege of acquiring and marrying my muse. And it was a thrilling experience. She was 4.5 years sober when we got together. And I'd done a little exercise where why don't you come up, Linda? Where I did an inventory of the things that I thought were admirable in the feminine form and that I wanted to look for someone to spend my life with. And this person was at the top of the list, and I approached her as such, straight up, eyes clear. First time I attempted to kiss her. Yeah, sit, please sit. First time I attempted to kiss her, she looked at me. I said, I can't sleep with you. You know, I'm a 1970 guy, you know. And she said, aren't you a little quick on the draw there, kid? And but I said, no, I want this to be different. I want this to be different. And I'd heard a man talk about meditating together before one became physically involved. And what happened is Adele and I meditated together for probably 8 years in alcoholic male years, but it was like 6 weeks before we before we got around to consummating our relationship, and we ended up like flying up to San Francisco and going and having a wonderful time, and it wasn't a power exchange. It was something holy. And we meditated together just about every day for 28 years. She jumped a mention on me 5 months ago. And I was her caregiver the last 3 years, and it was extraordinarily tough. But we were able to go through it with a grace and a joy. We were able to go and do Alcoholics Anonymous all over the world because we followed the suggestion that's in the book. If circumstances warrant. And I'm here to tell you that the language of the heart is something that you could cement into your beingness, and you can revolutionize your relationship today. Today. You can reboot it. And so I'm going to show you a thing that she and I did. And Linda has been kind enough to do. Now, so it's really simple. You know, if you got a primary relationship, are you going to treat it like it's primary? Right? Are you willing to invest 10 minutes a day for the next 3 months to see, to make an experiment. So this is what we did. We would sit, doesn't matter, read a little something out of a book, doesn't matter what it is. Again, with spiritual practice, we're dancing. Who cares what the music is, okay? And then we'd sit together, and we'd, it's fun to touch them, and this is called an essential tremor, by the way. It's not that I'm withdrawing from alcohol. we touch, and then we'll sit for 3 minutes. Now, in our tradition, it says that every AA group is a spiritual entity. And how do we make it a spiritual entity? We come together, we bring our consciousness together. So I am going to, I'm going to time us for a couple of minutes. So if you'd all just be kind enough to close your eyes, and let's take a couple of deep breaths. And if you don't have a meditation practice, thinking with your eyes closed is fine, and we'll just sit here for a couple of minutes and allow whatever it is that saved our lives to commune with us. Thank you. And then what we do is that we read the prayer for peace responsorially. So I'd say, make me a channel of peace.
Where there is hatred,
let me bring love.
Where there is doubt,
let me bring faith.
Where there is wrong,
let me bring the spirit of forgiveness.
Where there is discord,
I may bring harmony.
Where there is error,
I may bring truth.
Where there is doubt,
I may bring faith.
Where there is despair,
I may bring hope.
Where there is sadness,
I may bring joy.
Where there are shadows,
I may bring light. May I seek to comfort,
then to be comforted.
To understand,
then to be understood.
To love,
then to be loved.
It is forgiving.
One is forgiven.
And it is by dying to self that one awakens. And then we'd kiss and go into our day. But I know her husband, and he has a very violent story. Thank you, Linda. So the thing is that prayer gives us our marching orders for the day. And anybody that I sponsor, I tell them to put it in the visor of their car when they're going into work, if they've got a conflict at work. If they're going in any place that's difficult, to groove that in. There'll be a wonderful presentation later in the conference about emotional sobriety. What is it that Bill talks about? He talks about taking these principles out of theory and actually living them. And I can't tell you the incredible benefits that Adele Shea and I had from doing that prayer every day together and spending time in silence. Our friend Thomas Keating said that God's first language is silence. Everything else is a poor translation. So, tonight, as I was driving over here, I was not able to call Adele. I was not able to send her a little picture of what I was wearing. You know, say, oh, I'm all excited to go see the gang at UPA. Matthew's here and Michael's here. I got to make a phone call to my daughter, who's 34 years old, who's sober 16 months and is as sober as I have ever been. And she came to the rooms digitally. She has, and she sponsors people. She's got a sponsor, and she's never had to say because she got sober digitally. She, oh, your JS is done. And we get to share this thing now. And so I was able to call her and say, I know you didn't know this was part of the job description, but baby, it's it. And I'm going to see the gang in Yuma, and I'm gonna bring them your love. I'm going to bring them your strength. I'm going to bring them your hope. Each and every person in here has a gift that no one else has. And if we're fortunate enough to spend the time in meditation, we become aware of it and the way to go about sharing it. Pray and meditate the way you drank and used. Just try stuff, see where you end up. If you ever meet anyone, which you will, that says, oh, AA is a lower form of spirituality, look them dead in the eye and agree with them and back out of the room. Because you'll never win an argument, and they'll never understand that what we do for fun and for free one day is what every great spiritual leader ever suggested. We go to the hospital. We go to the prison. We feed the hungry. We spend time with the poor of spirit. But what we really do in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we raise the dead. I was dead when I came to you. And I have been given a life that every morning I wake up, I give thanks, I spend time in quiet, and then I ask sincerely to be able to give this gift of the awareness of something greater than myself to everybody that I meet in thought, word, or deed. And it's not that difficult. It's only a smile. It's only a me too. It's only ending every conversation that I can with, is there something that I can do for you? And many times people will say it. There is nothing that is impossible. sober. Nothing could produce that. And yet you are. Something has happened. And if we don't claim it in the way that we act in our homes and in our communities and in our nation, that something happened. There is something going on that is beyond anything I can imagine, anything that I can articulate. Isn't it a wonderful life? Thank you.